755 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome back to 755 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer with The Athletic. We're co-host, as always, Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's up, Eric?
Not much. How about you, Dave?
Not much, man. Down here in fabulous Miami, and I'm going to wear my Chuck Taylors for the second consecutive night, because if those get drenched by beer and wine, I can just throw them in the wash. Don't want to ruin a good pair of leather shoes, you know?
That's smart.
Yeah. You got to think about those things when you've been through a few of these.
Yeah. I saw you say that, you know, you saw the all the wrap, you know, all the protective stuff up in the clubhouse they were going to drop down,
yeah,
all the plastic and everything.
I bet they kind of cringed when they walked in there afterwards. But it's like, you know, you have to be ready. And the way that clubhouse is built, the lockers are totally recessed into the wall. You can't really put the rolls on top of the lockers and just kind of shove them to the back or something, you know? So they're hanging from the ceiling. I mean, and it's more involved than it used to be, where it used to just be clear plastic rolls. You know, you just roll them and tack it on top of the thing, whatever. Now they have sponsorships of them. So you got a Braves logo and a Coors Light logo all throughout the yeah. So that's going to be in the background. They know how much – those people aren't crazy. They know how much video is shot in those celebrations.
It's crazy when you're doing like a – and you're in a game, like a, you know, deciding game or something like that, where you could clinch and both teams might – you know, like the wild card games.
Yeah.
To go – if you go in the clubhouse in like the sixth or seventh inning, the clubbies are looking at the score.
Yeah.
Once they're convinced your team's going to win, they start throwing it, you know, putting it all up and dropping it. And then there'll be like a three-run homer, because they got to move couches and everything out of there too. It's not just the plastic that goes up. And you'll just see them scrambling to put all that shit back in and then take the plastic down and do it on the other side. It's funny to watch, how, you know, as the game plays out.
Yeah, I was watching one of the NBA, the 30 for 30, it was NBA thing, and they were talking about moving the wasn't it a basketball where they had to move the trophy from one clubhouse to the locker room to the other, something like that, or get it out of there, hurry to get it out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what game that was. But yeah, and they got to cover the, because the floors are carpeted, you got to completely cover those, everything. But my thing was, the Braves were down 2-0 in the first inning last night.
Yeah.
So at what point did you decide you got to put up the plastic? They didn't score a run. Then they were down 4-0. So they either really believe in the Braves, because they've come back a number of times. So maybe the third inning, they start, when they're down 2-0, they start putting that stuff up. But
yeah, I think it just takes so much time. You have to be kind of prepared for anything.
Yeah, obviously they did, because, I mean, they kept it up, and it's going to be there when the Braves arrive today for pregame.
Yep.
Because it wasn't there at pregame yesterday. They waited till after the game started. I'm sure they thought there's a pretty good chance they're going to win, you know. But so this, I'm assuming, unless somebody with the Braves, some official step forward and said, take that down, it's going to be there.
Yeah. See, I don't like that stuff. I see
that. Exactly.
Like, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Nobody does. And it's not the Braves doing. It's totally, you know, Rock and the clubhouse guys. They got to take care of their business and be ready.
Yeah.
But
those clubhouses get destroyed too. Like, teams hate, if you're going to clinch in their city.
Yeah.
And the clubhouses hate that. Because it's just, I mean, a party happens and champagne and everything. The champagne stinks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The next day, it's like a frat house after a party, man.
It really is. And everything stinks. Like, everything's
cigar
sticky.
Smoke everywhere, on top of the sticky everywhere. So, yeah, they're going to completely cover it, because they've remodeled that clubhouse a few times recently. And I'm sure they don't want to get it trashed.
I bet they just replaced the carpet.
And they have... Yeah, you know, the Braves have clinched on the road a couple of times, but mostly at home, from what I remember recently, most of them. But I remember one in Chicago in that tiny ass clubhouse. Oh my God. I mean, imagine everybody doing all that stuff in that clubhouse in Chicago.
Well, and you get three times as many, you know, extra people in there.
Yeah.
You got your normal, like, beat reporters and people that are covering the team all year. And then you have some guy just walking around with a camera. Those cameras, I don't understand. Like, my iPhone takes such great video. Why this guy has to carry
big-ass camera.
Bazooka
camera
on his shoulder.
Yeah, and all the team officials who are in there. I mean, everybody's there.
Everybody crams in.
There's a lot of people from the Braves in town last night that aren't usually here for most road games. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, the celebration will be delayed at least until today because the Braves went out and kind of shit the bed. But, you know, it wasn't surprising coming off what I said, just said on I did a live room with Nesbitt, Stephen Nesbitt on the power rankings, his live room just now. And I said, and he had somebody, one of the callers asked the question, have they ever watched a more significant or meaningful or whatever series than that? And I said, no, not a regular season series. I've never seen one that was as energized. I mean, it was 127,000, 28,000 people in three nights. And it was at home crowd and it was energized. And for the games to be so impactful, so good, the games,
yeah,
especially if you're a Braves fan, and to impact so much, you flip the standings and made it where the Mets, who thought they had a real good shot at going to the World Series, they had their starters lined up. They're going to skip the wild card. They're going to go the next round. They're going to have their three guys lined up. You went from that to the Braves wondering, okay, we got to get through the wild card series without Strider. We're going to have Fried and Kyle Wright won't be available for the first couple of games of the division series. You went from that to, all right, now there's a chance Strider's going to get that extra week of rest.
Yep.
Maybe you can get him back for the division series. You're going to have Fried and Kyle Wright lined up. You might have those three guys to start the first three games against in the LDS and not against the Dodgers. You won't face the Dodgers until the LCS. I said afterwards, to me, it was the difference between thinking, okay, yeah, the Braves got a chance to go back to the World Series. They got to get through the Dodgers. Yep. It'll be tough. They got to them last year. I went from that feeling to, I think this team has a chance to repeat as World Series champions.
It did that for me too.
Because the AL, obviously the Astros are tough, but they were tough last year. The Braves beat them. I think the wild card factor here might be not nothing to do with the wild card series, might be Spencer Strider.
Yeah.
If his oblique allows him to pitch at a high level again, like he was,
he's a game changer.
And if he can get that back in that first round, get sharp again without getting any recurrence of the injury, then he should be at full strength for that next round if they get through it and to face the Dodgers in the LCS. And I think the Braves with Fried, Strider, Wright line up better than the Dodgers pitching wise. Yeah. I think their bullpen is as good as the Dodgers or better. And their lineup isn't much right now with Olson going now and Riley going again, if he's going again. I mean, and he has been lately, but Olson's been hot, notwithstanding last night's 0-for-4 with three strikeouts. But he has been hot since that day off in Philly.
He homered every day.
Yeah, four straight games until last night. Dansby Swanson doing what he's doing. Obviously, Michael Harris. This lineup might be second best in the majors behind the Dodgers, right there with the Astros, a couple others. But I like the Braves' chances. Now I say that and they'll go out and get beat in the first round. But I really like their chances now. I think they are have a legit shot to get back to the World Series. And if they get to the World Series, we know they can win it because they're a big game team.
Yeah. Well, and it's just the guys that showed up. You know, it's something about that big series. And I think it's a big benefit for the Braves to have been playing these type of games.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, they have so many guys with experience in those games.
Yeah, no doubt.
They've all seen it. And I think it also shows you, like, you know, in sports, the don't mess it up mindset versus the shit we can do this thing mindset is so powerful. And I think the Mets, not by their own fault, because the Braves won 100 games, but I think they got caught in that don't mess this up, you know, mode. And I think they felt the pressure. And the Braves just showed up. You know, Riley showed up, Dansby showed up, Olson showed up, pitching showed up, and you saw it in that series. I think you saw experience.
I think you did too. I mean, this is a team that weathered the storms last year, and I mean, again and again and again, they didn't even go to a elimination game in any of their postseason series last year. They've done it for 4 years now. They had the disappointment of getting their asses kicked by the Dodgers that first year when they should not have been there, when they thought everybody thought they would still be rebuilding.
Yeah.
Rebuild in sooner than everybody thought. They got their asses kicked by the Dodgers. They come back the next year. They had that really disappointing loss to the Cardinals.
Yep.
where they had a chance to win the thing, and they juggled the rotation because they wanted Soroka to pitch on the road. He ends up pitching one time. Folti gets lit up in the last game here. So that was another year where they really thought they had a chance to go further. So they had that that disappointment. So they're getting tougher, man. They're getting you know, grizzled and having to go through these disappointments in the big stage. So I don't think after that they get next year, they take the Dodgers to the LCS and they up 2-0 and 3-1. Should have won it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dodgers said later, you guys were kicking our ass. They were in control of the series. Some of the Dodgers that later.
But that experience Braves, came in.
Yeah.
The Dodgers knew how to handle experience. That situation.
So the Braves, that to me was like the last step. Okay. We have learned everything we can learn about what we need to do to get to the World Series. We've learned it all. We got our asses kicked. We came back. We made adjustments. We got tougher. Okay. Kept boosting the payroll. So this year they go back. I mean, the next year they go back last year and they marched through the postseason, beat the best teams. I mean, you know, they beat the Brewers when they were hot. They beat them up there. They beat them. They didn't even go to the five games with them. And then they beat the Dodgers in six games. Nobody thought anybody was going to beat the Dodgers. They beat them out there. I mean, they outpitched them. They outhit them.
Yeah, and they blew a couple games out of the bullpen. Like, they were winning the majority right. of that series.
And the home field advantage was theirs, and they go to the Astros and beat the Astros with it. So this is a hardened team that's so experienced and has big game performers and has really good players and a great bullpen. And that first three, that's why I think Strider's so important. And Strider's not a guy that I think he's the rare – him and Harris are the rare guys that I don't think, and they've shown this in some big games – I don't think the bright lights of the postseason are going to affect them at all.
No, there's certain guys like that. You know, there's certain guys that, like, the Mariners have that Julio Rodriguez kid. And they also have this Kelenic guy. And they're just two different personalities. The Julio can play not giving a shit. He can play loose. He can handle the pressure. He doesn't have to learn the process of handling that.
Yeah.
And there's certain guys that can get called up, get put in the situation, and they just do well right away.
Like Acuna, hit that grand slam against the Dodgers at playoffs that year.
He can show up, like he did. He could show up and get better in a big situation. He could focus more. But, you know, that had to feel like a playoff series to the Mets. That had to feel like that was basically the first round of the playoffs. And that's kind of what happens. You go into the playoffs, and the pressure's there, and it's so high, and you just get your ass kicked. You're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And then the next year you do it and you're like, I felt this before. Okay, what did I do wrong last year? I just got to stay calm, pitch the same game. And you could see how easy it was for the Braves to do that. How prepared they were mentally for that adrenaline and that little bit different of a feeling that you feel in those huge games. And I just thought it showed up big time. The crazy thing, though, is DeGrom's been in the playoffs. Scherzer's won a World Series. And they beat both of those guys.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors. I think having the series in Atlanta obviously was a big.
That's huge.
That's a home field advantage, man. That's that's a real home field advantage.
When it's packed like that, crazy.
When it's packed like that, and they're doing the chop and all that, you can't tell me that that's not a home field. Now during the regular season, you know, if people aren't totally into it and just going crazy, maybe not a big deal, but. That's a home field advantage, and they felt it. And they felt the Mets felt the bigness of that series and the pressure, man. I mean, for all they've accomplished this year, it's still the regular season. They still have that hanging over them. They haven't been to the World Series in a long time, man. And they haven't done much in a postseason in a long time. So, for all their greatness, DeGrom and Scherzer, DeGrom's a different story because he's obviously still in the peak of his career. But for all his greatness in the postseason, he doesn't have a lot of experience in the postseason.
Right.
You know,
just 15.
He has not done much in the postseason one time. And that was 6 years ago or 7 years ago. And now the weight of the team is on his shoulders. I mean, he's expected to do great things. And Scherzer is not the Scherzer that dominated the postseason. It's a different guy. I mean, and people have to accept that. You can't just be, oh, but it's Max Scherzer. He's going to flip us. No, man, he's old Max Scherzer. So while he's going to have moments of greatness, he's not the same guy. So,
you can flip the switch until you can't.
Exactly.
You know,
and Bassett is a good pitcher, but Bassett has done nothing in the postseason or anything to make you think that he was going to step up and just dominate in that out. You know, I think it also helped Olson being his former long-time former teammate. Sure, Olson was able to talk to the guys, and Olson drew that big walk against him before the Darno at bat of the game, if not the series. It wasn't a home run, but man, that single up the middle after he battled, that was such a pro at bat, man. He showed how good a hitter he is there.
He's one of the Darno's one of those guys that I see not feeling pressure. Like, if you talk to him, how calm he is.
Yeah.
Like, that dude, you feel like it's game on the line right there, situation. His heart rate's at like 67.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how he's wired. But a lot of guys get – my first playoff game was that wild card game. I couldn't even feel the ball in my hands.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's so much buildup to it, you know, and you know what's going to happen. You're going to have this adrenaline. But if you haven't pitched with it yet – if you haven't felt like that, I mean, it felt like a major league debut. And I went in and I got lucky. I mean, I gave up four extremely hard hit balls. Two of them happened to be on the ground. I got a double play, and Beltran swung at a first pitch of the inning, which got me off on the right foot. Like, if I would have thrown the first pitch of the inning and Beltran would have laced it in the gap, I'm giving up four. How nervous I was and how uncomfortable I felt. It was like I'd never pitched before. Just feeling that energy for the first time.
And similar to what Fried said about going pitching against the Dodgers in a postseason. He said he couldn't feel his legs when he first went out there.
You're numb. And it's everything's about timing and feel and pitching. And all of a sudden it's like, I'm moving way fucking faster than I'm used to. Like, you feel like you got an adrenaline shot. I'm moving way faster than I'm used to. And my muscles are numb. You know, I can't feel the ball in my hand. And it's something that, you have to come up with your own method, whether it's like taking deep breaths or something you think about or taking more time in between pitches.
Yeah.
But everything starts happening so fast when you feel like that. And I just think that it's not something you can really prepare for. You know, you could read a mental skills book and then jump into that situation and stay calm. You know, you have to figure out what your method is and a way to do it. And I just think that the Braves just looked at home feeling like that. That Dansby, like a guy like Dansby, you feel like he feels normal when he finally feels that adrenaline.
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy that's done this since his high school career, you know, that wanted a ball in his hands with the game on the line in basketball. You know, there's some guys built differently. I'm sorry, there just are. I mean, Michael Jordan is the classic case. He always wanted the ball with the game on the line. He always wanted to take that shot. Other guys want to pass the ball off. They might be great players, but if they get a choice – you take it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather you shoot that ball. You know, there's a lot of guys like that.
I think most people out there, they might not have been anything more than high school athletes or whatever, but if they've got a job that involves a tight deadline, I think most people can relate to this. Maybe it's a pilot and you get into a tough situation where when that adrenaline takes over, man, you mentally read up on it all you want, but when the adrenaline takes over, your body just does things that you're like, what the fuck is going on, man? I mean, I've done this for so long and written on deadlines, and not to equate this to athletic performance because it's not the same. But when something happens in like a huge game, a World Series game, back especially writing for newspapers where we're writing the last pitch, you got to have a story punched, right? And it's got to be good because the editors won't even have time to read it over. When that happens and something like a closer comes in, blows the game, and you're rewriting your story, there's so much adrenaline going, and you're trying to type a story and think, and you're just going, oh, my God, please stop doing this to your body, you know? Just let me do this like I normally do.
Yep.
And the whole situation is changed by adrenaline.
And that's what you always hear guys talk about, the speed of the game. Right. You know, it's like you're speeding up,
right?
And all of a sudden you can't – nothing's working.
So I can't even imagine being an athlete with 42,000 people watching you and you're trying to throw a pitch to exactly a location, dot a fastball, and your body is just going in overdrive, you know, the adrenaline and all that. Mentally, it's just like, so everybody, the guys that without even doing it, having experienced it, can do it right away, those are special, special guys. Like Michael Harris had some line drives hit to him in that series and he went after them and made those risky leaping forward catches rather than let it drop for a single. And everybody's like, yeah, could he got it? I don't know. Probably played it smart for a single. No, he went full on from and never experienced it at all. Been in Double-A at the start of this year. That to me, that guy's special, man. That's a special dude.
And it's crazy because you can't, it's not a decision you can make to stay calm.
Right.
You know, it's such an overpowering feeling.
Right. So the Braves have that going in their corner. And that's a huge, huge factor, man, going forward. Assuming they clinch this thing, you wanted to clinch last night and get it done and be done with it. But at the same time, you have to understand that going from playing the biggest series that I think any of them had ever played in a regular season, at least, and the biggest series a lot of them had ever played, period. Three huge games, 42,000 people screaming, going nutso, and everybody talking about it, from that environment to the complete polar opposite.
As far as you can get from
Monday night in Miami against a team that's going to lose, that's lost 98 games or whatever, 96 games, whatever they've lost. 12,000 people announced attendance. So the actual crowd was about 7,000 people. Where you're hearing the music rattle off the roof because there's nobody there, you know? It's just a tinny sound, really loud. Everything's loud. It's the worst.
I hate that stadium.
It's really loud, but it's not the good loud. It's not a crowd roaring. It's all the artificial noise echoing off the roof, the metal roof.
That Clevelander bar is just blasting random music that you can hear throughout the whole stadium, the whole game.
So you know, and in the bus, they got in in early morning hours, man. They played a night game. And then they had to, bus to the airport, fly here, check in their hotel. So they obviously had a late arrival. They're not going to, so they get a late bus, they get traffic coming over. So anyway, yeah, you would like to go. And then you go out and you give up two runs in a first inning. And a guy, Bryce Elder, who we got to remember, he's still a prospect. He's still a rookie. Looked great against the Nationals. Looked terrific through the complete game. I mean, but he's facing the Marlins for the fourth time this season. And he's only made about 10 starts, and four of them have come against the Marlins. Dominated them the last two times, so they obviously know exactly what he's going to be featuring.
Yep.
And in the first inning, he gave up two runs, and he just wasn't throwing those backdoor sinkers and all that he had working against the Nationals, man, that were almost unhittable.
Yeah, I think he just didn't have his sinker yesterday. When I looked at it, I mean, if you watch those sinkers he was throwing against the Nationals, it didn't matter who he was pitching against that day.
Yeah.
It's just a type of movement that hitters are just going to wind up hitting the top of the ball or getting jammed. And I think that's one of the tougher things about, when you throw 98 and you don't have your A velo that day, you still have 95 or 96. And so when you're throwing a sinker, it's the drop is like going from 100 to 90, as far as like the benefit of that movement. When you have your sinker, he could have thrown that thing right down the middle every pitch against the Nationals. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
Just the way it was moving, that movement's so hard to track and square up. But then when you don't have it, it's like a 10-mile-an-hour drop type of loss when your sinker's flat. And for me, it's like you have to go through that phase of learning how to pitch without it, recognizing it, because you can't really see the difference. When you throw a really good sinker, it looks straight. When you don't have it, it looks straight too. And so you're still aiming for the same spots and still putting it in the same place. And all of a sudden the hitters tell you, they're the ones that'll tell you like, hey, this thing's horseshit today. And they'll just lace it in the gap. And so like for a guy like that to show up and just not have a sinker, It wouldn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're pitching in double A without that movement. Hitters can square up 90 and moving a little bit. Nobody can square up 90 and moving, this much like it was across the whole zone. And for me, he just didn't have that thing yesterday. And you have to learn how to pitch and recognize, okay, that's three guys in a row that just shit on this thing or took it out of the zone pretty easy because that movement's not there. What's my backup plan? How do I pitch without it? Do I have to throw a lot more breaking balls, or do I just have to be, extremely fine? Because when you have that giant movement, throw it right down the middle. You try that when it's moving just a little bit and it's kind of flat and they just lace it. So that's a tough drop off. But
yeah,
getting in at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m, you're not sleeping well.
He was with the team too. I mean,
he's not going to fly ahead.
Right, right. He wanted to be there for that moment, all that. And he's a pitcher that obviously he's not going to overpower guys and come out and be able to compensate on the nights when he doesn't have it. And without the sinker, I mean, that's his bread and butter, man. I mean, he's like he throws three or four pitches, but the sinker has to be there. And and the Marlins knew, I mean, and they were driving the ball too. I mean, they were hitting it hard.
Yeah.
They got some good young players, but yeah, just a reminder, Bryce Elder has thrown 159 innings this year. Last year, when he went by far higher than he ever had, because it was his first pro season, he went 137 and two thirds, and they were done now, you know? I mean, he was home. Mm-hmm. You know, he's watching the Braves in the postseason now. He's at 159, and those have been 54 of those have been in the major leagues. So those have been like double that amount, you know, as far as stress and all that,
yep.
Stress innings. So he's way above what he's done before. So if he shows a little fatigue in one start, especially after that, after going a complete game, first complete game for the Braves in his last start, maybe it's a little predictable.
Well, and you know, getting to pitch a clinching game, you know, even if the rest of the team's not feeling, you know, the rest of the team might have been a come down, but for him to get to pitch in that big of a game, you know, that's the same type of thing we're talking about, where it can just, you have a little more adrenaline than you used to, a little more pressure on yourself, and wind up coming out and your mechanics are a little off because of that timing change from how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And you get hit.
Yeah. So, but he has put himself squarely in the mix for, well, he'll be at the outside, cause they're going to have the keep them. What do they call it? Stay hot team, where they're going to have a bunch of guys there, and they did it last year. And it really showed in the postseason. I mean, Alex Anthopoulos covers all the bases, man. He's ready. And last year, they had Kyle Wright ready. It's not like they're calling him at home going, warm up, because we're going to need you in the next round. They're down at Gwinnett, the alt site, staying a bunch of guys down there. And they called up Kyle Wright, and look what he did in the World Series. He saved their ass, you know? Well, this year, they're going to have guys like there, several guys there that can do it, whether it's Mueller, whether it's Elder. You know, it's going to be some guys there. And Elder, you know, if they have an injury or whatever, Elder could be on the postseason roster. He could be on the postseason roster anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he could be postseason roster anyway, but especially they're going to look at matchups. You know, that's what they did last year. The first year they made it, they faced the Dodgers in that division series. Braves hadn't been to the postseason in a while, and they shocked everybody by putting they had two of their young starters in the bullpen because they wanted power arms.
Yep.
In a bullpen facing the Dodgers, because they knew they couldn't have junk ballers against the Dodgers, and they had a couple of guys in their starting rotation that are in their bullpen that relied too much on off speed, and they were like, Dodgers will kill them. We need some power guys to try this. So they're always thinking, and Alex will make moves, and if he thinks Elder can help him in the first round, he'll be in there in the postseason. Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show. Another guy that's fighting for his postseason life will be pitching for the Braves tonight in the second chance to clinch. I know a lot of people cringed and went to social media and howled in protest when I tweeted last night that Jake Odorizzi is going to start tonight. And when I got to be honest, man, when we asked Snit after the game who's starting tomorrow, and Snit said Odorizzi, the first response was, really? I mean, I got to admit, I was a little surprised. I thought, With the clinch possibility tomorrow, tonight, I thought they would go to bullpen game. I really did. And because you're going to have that long rest afterwards if you clinch, you're going to have time for all your boys. But then when he brought in Jesse last time, okay, well, he's off the board. He's not starting tomorrow. You know, but I thought maybe you'd go Jesse for a couple of innings. You know, you could have Stevens, you have Minter, McHugh, and you get it to, you know, Skip Minter because he's so much late innings now, but you have enough guys to bridge it to Iglesias, Minter, and Kinley at the end,
yep,
easily with this bullpen, and knowing that you're going to have, 5 days off afterwards. So I thought he'd probably go that way, but Snit obviously has faith. He knows what Odorizzi's done in a couple of his starts, and maybe likes the matchups against the Marlins, and likes the possibility, but I do know he will have a quick hook.
Yeah, it's got to be quick.
Quick. It could be first inning he's going to have guy up. So, in effect, you could have a bullpen game anyway if Odorizzi hasn't. If he hit first three batters, he walks a couple of them, Snit's going to have him out of there, and you're going to have a bullpen game anyway.
Yeah, You have to be ready for that. I mean, he could come out and look good, and sometimes
– right.
You know, these type of teams like the Marlins or somebody are really good younger teams for a guy with a lot of time to kind of, you know, carve up, not right, just try to overwhelm with his stuff and make pitches. And it could work out where he locks in and has a good start against them and they don't have to do the bullpen game. But
right,
if he comes out and doesn't look good, I mean, the first batter gets on to the game, I'm probably calling down to the pen like, hey, you know, so-and-so needs to start stretching a little bit. Because you can't let this game get out of hand.
You know he's told him that, right? A couple of relievers, be ready from the start. Be ready.
Tell you that, and you go down to the pen, and it's like, dude, to throw the first pitch that he throws of the game is a ball, and you just stand up, start doing some arm swings and stretching your hamstrings out. We might be in this one early, boys.
That's what they had. Who was it? That was Stevens was doing that the other night, early in the first inning, I think it was. Yeah, he was doing it. So. He's not going to let the game get out of hand. So people don't need to worry about that. And on the other hand, we got to remember, it was only a few weeks ago that Jake Odorizzi took a no-hitter to the sixth inning at St. Louis.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's a tough spot to be in when you're a guy like him that, I mean, he's just working through it right now, but he's got experience.
Yeah.
And he's been good. And
big stage with the Astros. He pitched in some big games.
Which is, you know, that's a good thing. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, he can handle the pressure. It's not going to be the pressure if Odorizzi struggles today. He's going to struggle because he's been struggling.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, you don't really care why. You just, we need you locked in. And if you're not, we're going to get some guys throwing down there quick.
So it's going to be interesting. It's such a weird damn clinch situation right now because the Braves do it with one game. They could have done it last night if the Nats lost. The Nats game gets rained out. It's going to be a doubleheader today. They're supposed to start at 4, but it's raining again up there. It looks so dreary up there. It reminds me of why I don't live in the Northeast, man. Never have, never will. Love visiting. Will not live those gray days the Northeast has and the Rust Belt cities have, man. I just if it gets rained out, and they got to play these games. But if they play at 4, the Braves could clinch before they even throw a pitch.
Yeah.
They got an early start.
You don't want it. You want to do it, but you want to do it after a win. You know, you don't want to get your ass kicked by the Marlins and start spraying champagne on each other.
Yeah.
It didn't feel quite the same. But
if the game started on time at 4 o'clock, the Braves start here at 6:40. I love these early starts in Miami.
Find out in like the fourth inning.
If they're behind, you know, by a lot, but I mean, it's a 2 hours and 40 minutes they have to finish that game, and you know before you even throw first pitch. Yeah. I think the lineups could change here if they were to lose at 4 o'clock game. The Braves might play a couple guys, but they want to stay sharp. They're about to have some off days anyway. So, but anyway, it's raining again. I don't know if they're going to start on time, if they're going to get one game in, what they're going to do there, but. I know the Braves will just want to go out and take care of themselves and be done with it, you know.
Yeah, and it's definitely not bad they're playing a doubleheader because then you're in a situation where you could have to ask Diaz to go twice.
Right.
Not happen tomorrow. You know, things like that.
Right.
But yeah, I would just, you know, you want to clinch after a win.
I've not looked at the odds, but I would guess that there's still at least like 99% that the Braves win this division.
Yeah.
One of the six opportunities went by the wayside last night, but there's still 5.
Yeah.
They just need to win one of the last 2 games or have the Nats lose any of their 3 games. Nets lose any of their 3 games against the Nationals. So,
yeah, that whole, you know, no tiebreaker is a game changer. And winning that series, I mean, it's like being, you know, it basically put them 2 up with 3 to play.
Yeah, and that's why that series was so huge. I mean, the Mets went into that thinking, worst case scenario, we lose 2 out of 3. We've still got the tiebreaker, and if this thing ends in a tie, we win the division. So that's why it was like, that's why they shocked the Mets world, man, by sweeping them. Not only, you know, taking the division lead, but also stealing the tiebreaker advantage from them. You know?
Yeah. And in convincing fashion, there wasn't any like, you know, we got lucky this game or they won every game.
And even the Mets players that they interviewed said they were the better team. They kicked our asses, beat us in every phase. Yeah. And I think anybody watching that, any nonpartisan person watching that series had to go, the Braves are a better team.
Yeah.
And I don't think I don't think many people outside of Braves country probably thought that going into the series, but right now they're a better team. I mean,
and think about winning the season series after losing 4 or 5 up in New York.
Oh, my God. And when they lost those 4 or 5 in New York, I got to be honest. I thought they had no chance to catch the Mets and pass them because the Mets were such a better team at that point of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's changed. That's changed. The Braves have shown what they're made of, man. Snit and his coaching staff have done a tremendous job getting these guys where they are right now. They never panic. They never panic and cause disarray in the clubhouse, because when they panic, that trickles down. Then people start panicking in the clubhouse, and people start pointing fingers and rolling eyes and talking off the record about this guy and that guy. The Braves don't have any of that.
Mm-mm.
None of that.
No, I thought it was awesome. Snit didn't say anything before that series or before the game. He just said, look, these guys know what they're doing.
Right.
I didn't say anything before game six last year either.
I love that answer, yeah.
Because it's so easy to just add to the pressure with a bad managerial speech or poorly timed. And I've seen some managers do it, and the team's like goes into the meeting like, shit, we were ready.
Yeah.
Now we're nervous. Now there's pressure. The way you just built it up more and made me double think this thing. I felt good. I was ready.
Right. Yeah. If he says something unnecessary because he feels like, you know, he wants to be part of this, or he wants to take charge of this, or, you know, put his fingerprint on it, you know, put his stamp on it. Snit has none of that ego where he has to feel like, yeah, I told him before the game. He could say after I told him before the game, just go out and do it. No, he's like, no, last night, are you going to talk to him tonight with a chance to clinch? No, I didn't talk to him yesterday. I didn't talk to him.
It's so cool. Because
our guys know what they're doing. Yeah. I think they know. They know all the scenarios. They've been through the postseason four times now, some of them.
Yeah.
And the ones that haven't have been talked to by the guys that I don't need to talk to them. The players talk to them.
It's so, just so cool. It's just having so much feel for your team.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's an importance too of having guys like Dansby on the team, man. I was asked on the room this morning on that podcast that do I think the Braves are in a corner as far as Dansby's concerned? And I was like, I wouldn't say in a corner, but I think he's underscored his importance and value to this team. It's not just a great defensive shortstop and a rare big game performer. That's one of those guys that just like we were talking about. His adrenaline doesn't overwhelm the rest of him in those situations. He just is in a groove in those situations. He wants to be in those situations. He's not shy.
Even seeing
his
calm throughout the day, you know, interacting with him throughout the day. And it's like, this guy's just treating it like another game. And you know, you're passing those messages on to your teammates and everything. You do this. And then once he goes out and goes deep.
Yeah. You know, and the rest of the team's just like, yeah, that's our guy, man.
Yep. That's what he does in big situations.
And Freddie was a big game guy too. Not quite like Dansby is. Freddie's numbers were better, like with runners in scoring position and all that. But I'm talking about the ultimate big game moments. That is, Dansby is a rare dude in those, man. And I don't know what it's not, close and late situation numbers or is runners in scoring position. But I'm just talking about the big moments.
Well, it seems nobody, like
you want him there.
And it seems like. It's not just the fact, like you can have a postseason series and look at it at the end. Oh yeah, he hit 321.
Right.
But with the bases loaded in the third, he struck out on three pitches.
Right.
And he put his numbers up for the series. It feels like when Dansby gets that hit, it's the biggest, most important at bat of the series. He hits a single. He might go 1-for-4 in the game.
Yeah.
But the one hit he got was, it changed the entire momentum of the game. Like the bigger that situation was, the better he does.
And the same thing in the field, man. He makes decisions in the field that I just can't imagine having such control over yourself mentally that you're not hyped up. Like the play in the ninth inning the other night, hits him in the chest, and he never panics.
Nope.
The play he made in Arizona that I'll never forget it, a few years ago, behind in shallow center field. It was like, oh, my God, who makes that play under that situation? So – He all the adrenaline with him and everything seems to be funneled into performance rather than countering your performance.
He channels it well.
Yeah. But anyway, and the point I was making is I don't think that you can really lose another piece of your culture and your clubhouse chemistry and expect just to plug in another guy. You got Olsen, great replacement for Freddie. He has not been Freddie. He's not quite as good in the field this year, at least as Freddie, and he doesn't have as many big moments as Freddie at the plate. He's not the consistent guy Freddie is. Olsen's had a damn good year, though, and people are going to look at that and realize he's had 30, how many home runs now? I mean, the guy's in 33 home runs or whatever it is. He's got 100 RBIs, and he's played solid. He's been really good. He's just
really
not
good
been, it's just not been Freddie who's going to be top three MVP again, but he's been damn good. He's a great, and he's going to be 5 years from now, going to be really good still. But Dansby, you're going to knock off. If you don't re-sign him, that's 2 years in a row where you lopped off a huge piece of your clubhouse chemistry. Your leader on the field now, especially without Freddie out there. Dansby is the unquestioned captain of the defense. Wash turns over his cards. All the other infielders have the little cards on placement and all that. Dansby has, as Wash put it, he has my cards. He has control of the infield now because I can completely trust him to set the infield. Wash doesn't even have to do that now. Dansby does it. So you're not going to have that from another guy stepping in spring training and taking over and building that trust right away. I don't see one guy out there that could do that, especially that you'd have to sign on a short deal. Because, you know, if Alex does that, it's going to be like a JD deal, overpay for 1 year. Because they're not going to sign Correa. They're not going to sign Correa for $35 million a year, you know, when you get Dansby for $10 million less than that a year.
I wouldn't say
Trey Turner, same way. He's going to get $5 million more at least per year than Dansby.
For me, you can't afford to lose him.
Me too.
You couldn't afford to lose Freddie either, if you would have asked me. But
right
after losing Freddie and then you lose Dansby too, it's like you've really taken some shots at that culture when you start taking those guys out of the clubhouse.
And a reason you've compensated for Freddie in large part is Dansby. He's having a career year. If he'd have had his normal year, good year, then he doesn't pick up some of that slack that Freddie – he's picked up some of it. Austin picked up a lot of it, and especially in the first two-thirds of the season. Olsen's had stretches where he carried the offense. Harris has been unbelievably good since he came up. So a lot of guys step forward and help pick up the slack. So you don't notice Freddie as much as you might have. But if you also lop Dansby out of that mix next year, you really got to be hoping rather than being able to count. If you could pencil him in long-term now, if you got a long-term 5-6 year deal and you can pencil in all the guys that you have, you know you're going to be competing, not just, you know, for division titles, but competing for World Series year after year. So I think you got to do it, man. You got to bite the bullet and do it.
You got to have guys looking up to a guy like that.
Yeah.
Like for me, you have to have guys, you know, your young guys you're calling up. And part of the reason we're talking about, you know, Harris came up and did so well. These guys came up and did so well is when you're in a clubhouse with a guy, watching how he works.
Yeah.
Watching how he acts, watching what he says. And then he backs it up on the field year after year. You know, it's not like this is the first year Dansby's got big hits or made big plays. It's all he does. You know, I mean, I'm sure he goes through his slumps and stuff, but when he comes up in a big moment, even if he's not getting a hit, it's a great at bat. And if he doesn't get the hit there, the next inning he's laying out and making a tough play in the hole that could easily go for a hit. He's making the play like it's nothing, making the right decision, and he just does it time and time again. And the way he goes about his business is something you want everybody watching that.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, as long as he's not asking for top of the pay scale shortstop, because that's going to be, you know, guys making 30, 35 a year. And you can't really do that probably with their payroll and still re-sign Max Free, which I think you need to do, and sign Strider in a year or two. You wait with him to a long-term deal with Strider. You wait for pitchers. I think you have to wait a little longer, make sure that, you know, they're going to get past all injuries and everything. But Dansby, they're only paying with the money that they're saving on those other contracts in the back end, when they're only peaking at $22 million for Austin Riley, for the peak on Austin Riley and Matt Olson's both $22 million. You know, Harris is unbelievably team friendly deal at the back end of that. Acuna's $17 million peak. All that money you can that's why you can still afford to give a guy like Dansby. To me, he's worth between the $22 and $25 million. I'd go up to $25 million a year. I would with him for 5 years. You know, maybe not six. You're splitting hairs, but I'd go 5 years, $125 million with Dansby. That's just me. I'd do it. 25. That's $3 million more than you're giving Riley and Olson. But I think with everything he brings to the team, his age, and the fact that he's played right up to free agency, that's the difference. Those other guys weren't right at free agency.
Yeah, and that's the problem. If you were watching that Mets series and you're GM for the Dodgers and you're looking at maybe Trey Turner leaves, there's so many teams that are watching him and just, I mean, that's he's everything you want in a shortstop.
Yeah.
For me, I know there's so few guys are going to hit some more homers or have a little higher batting average, but I don't think that, like you said, you know, the pay you're going to have to pay these guys It's hard. It's hard to make an argument that Dansby's not worth what those guys are worth. Yeah. When you watch the games and you watch big games happen, and you know that having this guy on your team in a huge series, he's going to show up.
Yeah, and that's not even taking into account all the intangibles. I mean, and those are big. When you're signing to a long-term deal, I mean, we saw the Marcell Ozuna thing blow up in their face. Okay, that's the one mistake Alex has made with a long-term deal. The other guys, these are solid dudes that you're not going to have to worry about off the field. Dansby is the ultimate guy. Him and Michael Harris are like ultimate guys when it comes to that. All those guys are, though. Olsen, Riley, these are not guys that are going to – and I'm confident saying that, which I wouldn't say about some guys because I don't want it coming back to me in 4 or 5 years going, yeah, you said this about
– Yeah, remember you said this.
Barring some catastrophic event in their lives that changes them, I just don't see that. But Dansby is such a good guy. I mean, he's like – he's the kind of guy that makes you sick if you look at him and go, Jesus, he's got everything going for him because he's such a nice guy, yeah. You know, a decent guy, and he's never going to cause problems off the field and all that. He's got his life in order. He's about to get married to another athlete who she's a great person, from what I understand. I mean, that's not a guy you have to worry about. So it's one more box you could check, like one more guy I don't have to worry about for the next 5 or 6 years. That's pretty big when you're a GM and you can like – a third of your team, you can be like, we don't even have to worry about those positions. We can focus on this need and this need, you know, in the offseason, adding one starting pitcher, a free agent, a reliever. But you don't have to worry about these up-the-middle defensive positions. When you got Ozzie signed, you got Harris signed, you have, you know, you're great at catcher right now. You got him for another year, and they got Contreras. Looks like he's ready to step in. And then you got Acuna in right field, and you could have your shortstop signed long-term if you get him. I mean, that makes it a lot easier for a GM to fill in the pieces.
The only thing that makes me think it wouldn't happen is that it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I know. And unless it's changed in the last week or so, there wasn't talks going on. There's not a lot going on. So I think it looks like he's done the same thing as he did with Freddie. He's going to wait till it's over, or maybe they make a lap. They're going to have time here between once they clinch. You could do it then. There was just a contract signed. Otone just signed his one-year deal. You could do it then. I know the focus has to be on the postseason, but to me, there's not going to be a lot of haggling. Doesn't need to be involved. You know, each party knows the other. It's not like another team is recruiting him or courting him. You can make the offer. Here it is. Dansby's going to be like, I like that or I don't. But you can get it done. You don't have to wait till that 5-day period after the World Series. He gets to that point. It's hard for the agent not to at least entertain. Let's wait a few more days because I want to wait and see what fill in the blank team is going to offer.
Well, and that's the situation he's going to be in. Is
you don't do it now.
It seems like the Braves have been where they're at, and he's where he's at pretty much this whole year. Something would have happened. You know, something would have signed. Right. They're just not close enough. But that's the decision he's going to have to make. Is here's the peak dollar the Braves are willing to offer. And maybe if he can show them, like, hey, you know, Dodgers said $30 million a year.
Yeah.
Come on, 19's not enough, or wherever he's at when it's that big of a gap.
They're offering 30. You can go to 25, even with this different state income taxes, and you know how much I want to be here. You can still go to 25, make it fair.
And they might be, the Braves might be thinking, here's the most somebody's going to pay for them. And then they find out, oh, shit, you know, this team's willing to go up to this amount, and we really want to keep this guy. And then they have to make their decision. You know, there's value for the team to see what he could get out there, too.
Right.
But for me, letting him go on the market – there's just going to be a few teams that have watched him the last few years get all those big hits, make all those big plays. Just the guy he is. You know, you can look at his numbers alone. I want that player on my team. But when you watch how he does it, when he does it, the way he goes about his business, you know, who he is, that's a really tough player to lose.
Right. It's going to be like musical chairs with the shortstops that are available.
Yeah.
If you're the Braves at this point, maybe you say, all right, let's let the other teams, the biggest dollar teams, fill in the blanks with these. And then we got him. Then it'll be down to us and this team. And they might be taking that gamble at this point because they already lost the gamble as far as waiting, because he literally would have been $5 million or more less per year if they'd signed him in spring training.
I mean, is there anything more Dansby to do than have a huge free agent year?
I know it.
You know, I mean, with like so many guys can't even talk throughout the year.
Right.
Because
it's,
you know, you call it a distraction, but it's actually added pressure.
Yeah.
It's another factor of I have to perform for this reason even more.
And a lot of guys are like, pressure.
I don't want to handle that. Dansby's like, bring it on. I'll have the best year of my career.
Yeah. Yeah. and then I'll have the best series of my career in the biggest series of my life. Yeah. I'm at home running all three games. Yep. How about that?
Yeah. Not wall scrapers either. I'm taking Scherzer 440.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, a lot going on. That in that situation is kind of in the backdrop behind everything, because everybody, it's funny because you had people like dismissing us earlier in the year when we're talking about how, you know, I'd say they need to sign Dansby and you know, he's worth over $20 million a year. And people are like, you can't commit that to Dansby. He's an average bat. Because all they're doing is looking at that point, the metrics, you know, mm-hmm. that say his bat is not, you know, elite or whatever. I'm going, man, just if you watch Dansby play, you understand its value to the team. But I also understand that we got the advantage of knowing people. You know people that know him and what he means to the team. And I see it on a daily basis. So we have a little bit more idea of what the intangibles are involved rather than just looking at the numbers, which I understand don't stand out the way they do for a Trey Turner, you know. But Dansby is a great player, man.
Yeah.
And he's a huge piece of this team. And the turnaround, he was here when they still sucked. Then when they brought him over from there, they traded for him, brought him up, and they still had Matt Kemp on this team, you know, mm-hmm. in the middle of the lineup. He was here in the bad years. So yeah. He has been that guy. Him and Nick Markakis and Freddie were those guys, you know, through the whole thing. Markakis retired. Freddie went away. Now it's Dansby that's been there through the whole thing. So.
I just, you know, for me, if I'm the team, I mean, and you've gotten all these guys way under market.
Right.
This might be one guy you have to be like, oh, we didn't get a good deal on him. You know, because we pushed it kind of to free agency and we tried to get this deal. Now it's not there. And, you know, they're not going to play their hand. But for me, I'd already have a number way above what I'm offering. Like,
right.
If it comes down to it, he tells me he signed somewhere else. I don't have to call the owner and ask for another $5 million a year to offer him. I can just do it.
Yeah. And considering the fallout they've had from the Freddie thing, I think that would help them make that decision. The right decision as far as this, because you don't want that, you know, it's worked out so far, but you do not want this to blow up in your face next year and you don't make it because the guy you brought in doesn't bring any of it. And you all of a sudden the chemistry isn't quite what it was, or that guy is, you don't have that guy stepping up in the big, big moments. You don't want to have that. You don't want to haggle over a few million. You don't want to haggle over a few million dollars because you
and lose him. It's just, you have a special thing going right now. And it's not, it's not just the numbers, you know, it's not just the performance. It's like snit managing.
Yeah.
You know, the coaching staff, all these people are creating this environment where guys are just thriving and outperforming who they are. Their guys come here and come to Atlanta and they get better.
Yeah.
And you start just like removing personalities and parts of that magical thing you have going on where you can play that huge three-game series and just kick the shit out of the bats.
Agreed. Totally.
You can't mess with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, when we do the another one of these, I think the Braves will have clinched and we'll be looking ahead to hopefully who they're going to play in the division series. They eliminated Milwaukee last night. They are out of the picture. Man, they've been a disappointment. And the Phillies step up, man. The Phillies were wheezing there for a while. But, you know, when they get a game like they got last night from Nola, two more home runs from Schwarber, it's when you're reminded they can be a dangerous team, man. They got that guy, the other guy in the rotation that is Zach is a stud, man. The Phillies, you get them back to back, and Nola when he's on, Wheeler, it's like, they can be a tough out, as they say. So, and the Cardinals as well, with all they've got going, that magic that they got going with the old
Cardinals
guys.
Cardinals is a team I don't want to mess with.
Yeah. And their place is a really tough place to win in a postseason, especially. So it ain't going to be easy. That second round, even if you get a first round bye, the division series is not going to be easy.
Yeah, but that wild card is so huge. I mean, you said
huge.
And I listened to you and I felt it. But then when I looked at it on paper, you know, I saw the bracket laid out, what the journey is to get to the, you know, the NLCS one way versus it's, I mean, you got to win that wild card series first and then you got to go past the Dodgers.
Yeah. Never has it been more important than this year to avoid that. It's not one game. It's three games. It's going to wear your team down, man, before you face the Dodgers.
And I'm so glad it's not a one-game wild card anymore because
I mean,
this the last four games were the perfect example of why a wild card game, one game series is stupid. Sure. Like the year we were 10 up on the Cardinals or whatever, but you can play the, you can play the Mets, face their two best pitchers, beat the shit out of them, win a series, and then you can lose one to the Marlins.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you can hit a, you can have the momentum go in your favor and hit a fly ball to middle left field, and it could be called an infield fly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anything can happen in one game.
Anything can happen in one game. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk again real soon after the Braves have taken care of business, I would imagine, but or had the Nationals take care of business for them.
Yeah.
755 is real. We are out.